Hello and welcome to Phoenix Cinema Podcast. My name is Chris Austin and joining me is Luke Parker.
Great to be back.
Hello, sir. And joining me again is Caroline Jameson. Welcome back, Caroline.
Thank you. Happy to be back.
Happy to have you back. And Caroline is joining myself and Luke because we are all going to be discussing the 1997 Pedro Almodovar movie, Live Flesh. Phoenix is screening this movie as part of its Pedro Almodovar season, a season dedicated to one of contemporary cinema's most unique and talented filmmakers. So, Live Flesh, guys. Caroline, Luke, what's your relationship with Pedro Almodovar? Are you aware of his work? Have you seen any of his previous films?
This was my Almodovar debut.
Oh.
Yeah. I heard lots about him, but this is my first watch.
Mm-hmm. Caroline?
I'm what's his other work?
Right.
I think this is the first film of his I've seen also.
Oh, it interesting. Seems.
Yes. Yeah, this was the first one that I've seen of his.
Cool.
As well.
Okay. Well, that makes it even more interesting then. So, yeah, well, let's start off with yourself, Luke. What were your thoughts? What did you think?
Well, so I know a bit about Almodovar, and I know a bit about his films. I used to have a colleague who was Spanish, and she was a massive fan, and she was always raving about his films, especially his film All About My Mother, which is one I really want to watch.
Yeah, I've heard of it, haven't seen it.
But this one I'd actually never heard of, and in general, I'd say I was a little disappointed. I know from what I've read that this isn't claimed to be his best work or anything like that. So, you know, it's not like I'm jumping to any conclusions about what he's like as a filmmaker from this film. This just felt like a very long episode to like this very melodramatic Spanish telenova, which is what it's going for, obviously.
Yeah.
But there was just a lot I didn't really understand in terms of like characters and character choices, which really what is essentially like a people driven film and character driven film made it hard for me to kind of not necessarily like resonate with it, but like connect with it or care about it. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that there's nothing to like about the film. It looks amazing. It's got a really cool, really neat soundtrack. So there's a lot of like technical aspects to appreciate about the film. But in general, I was a little bit underwhelmed as like my first exposure to him as a filmmaker.
Fair enough. Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I mean, what you said there about it being a telenovela, 100%, 100%. It's a soap opera, and it seems to be this seems to be Almodovar's mode, because this is the third Almodovar film I've seen, but because of Film Club we had watched two previous Almodovar movies. What were the films? A Woman on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown and Bad Education. And I remember with Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, the whole movie kind of being like, what is this? What tone is even being established here? I'm not quite. And it takes a while. You have to kind of tune into its frequency. And yeah. Then you're like, oh, this is like absurd high camp. Okay.
Especially with that opening, like you have the very first opening, which is like almost like the prelude to the film. And then you have like setting up the characters, which is just very intense and dramatic, but still a million miles away from like what the rest of the film is really actually like.
Right.
So like the first half an hour of the film, you're really jumping like around the place, and it's hard to understand like what the hell is this going to be like.
Yeah, I remember because I watched this with my girlfriend. Half an hour in, she turned to me, Carrie Anne, and she was like, "It's like three different films. We skip 24 years in half an hour."
Yeah.
What were your initial thoughts, Caroline?
So, very similar. I had no idea what to expect. I didn't look up anything about the movie.
Right.
I just found it on Amazon, was like, here we go. And so for the first few minutes, I just didn't even know what I was in for or what was happening. I also found it confusing at the beginning because we jump around in time so much. And I think that they did a good job. Like, something I think that really helped was that all of the characters had such different looks as time passed. So that really helped to keep my head straight about where we were in the timeline. But that was confusing. And I feel like in film, at least the ones that I see mostly, like, you don't go over huge spans of time like that normally.
Yeah.
Like, it's usually like a high pressure situation or like a, you know, some sort of extraordinary event that happens over the over a short period of time or in like a day or like whatever. Right. So I was like, what's going on here? But I also, after I watched the film, I Googled it, and it's based off of a famous novel. And knowing
an English novel as well, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it English?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So knowing that, I'm like, oh, they didn't have time to like take us through all of the like history and fill in the gaps, which happens so often when you translate a book into a movie.
Mm-hmm.
So then I was like, okay, I see why it's like so jumpy. Cause they had to, because it can't be a 10 hour film, but, I think there was probably a lot more like just like backstory and like, just more in the book that we just didn't have a chance to see.
Jeez. Yeah. I mean,
but I think for me, I mean, I saw the film like, I think over 2 weeks ago now, so it's not like fresh for me, but I totally get what you're saying. But like, from thinking about how they were going to like cut and choose what parts to put in the film, I don't really understand why they went for that opening, because it, at least for me, it didn't seem like it added anything. And I was a little bit confused about the whole lifetime bus pass sort of thing.
You would think that the lifetime bus pass, would play some significant factor in the film.
No, I was really waiting for that to be like, some like little component that like unlocks us something else later in the movie.
I thought there'd be wasn't. Callback or something like that, but no.
So that was interesting.
That's cool. Well, and then what about the rest, as the rest of the film unfold, how did you go along with it, or were you kind of...
I was pleasantly surprised.
Oh, great.
I loved the high drama. I loved the telenovela vibe to it. Because it that's exactly what it was. But for me, the film was so beautiful. I really love this director's like eye and his like vision and the way that he uses color. And like, we were talking about like how the characters have big physical changes in like throughout the story. And I just loved the visual storytelling of it. So So to me, it was telenovela, but elevated. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a wild ride and it was really fun.
Well, it was a wild ride for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm so pleased, Caroline, that you enjoyed it. Yeah. Because it's, it does take, I genuinely do think, especially if we're so used to, you know, watching these Western movies or seeing a certain type of format and formula that you just get accustomed to. With Almodovar, it's so off. It's just there's a quirkiness to it, and it does take a major adjustment. And I'm so pleased you enjoyed it. Yeah, because I think I kind of fall in between the both of you with this. On the one hand, I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? You know, at any given time. And then on the other hand, I'm like, there's so much to appreciate in terms of even performances, again, the directing, the cinematography, what you said, Caroline, about the colors. They're so vibrant. Yeah. and they really pop. And clearly the color red is very significant. You've just got red everywhere. And so it makes it fun as well in an aesthetically sort of pleasing way. Yeah. Narratively, yeah, it's just, it's crazy. But that opening scene, I kind of loved it. I kind of loved it because I was like, whoa, I mean, you're dropped into this. Is it a brothel?
I think it's supposed to be a brothel. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you have this woman that's just giving birth in one of the rooms or very close to it. And like the madam of the brothel, you know, takes her and is trying to help, takes her into the street, flags down a public bus, gets her onto the bus. They're not going to make it to the hospital in time. So the guy has to pull over to the side of the road and she delivers. And it's just this incredibly tense, but also at times wonderfully comedic moment. I love the woman who plays the madam. She's such a character. And it's, you know, so like wise and worldly. And I mean, God damn it, she fucking bites the umbilical cord loose. You know, she's such a soldier. And it's amazing as like a self-contained film. I could see it just being its own short film and how incredible that would be. And it's Penelope Cruz's only segment in the movie, which surprised me. I thought she was going to be in it, you know, as like one of the main characters. But yeah, the opening scene, I thought it was quite wonderful. I really enjoyed that. Again, like you said, disconnected from the rest of the movie.
I mean, I agree with what you're saying. Don't get me wrong. Like it was great and it was super entertaining. But I just think in terms of like its relevance to the rest of the movie, I was just a bit. Yeah. Befuddled, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. No, I honestly totally agree.
The excessive details, like you were saying, like these lines that we thought were going to like be really significant. And especially as people who watch a lot of movies, we sort of know like things to look out for that will connect the dots for us later. And so and this is another thing from acting school is like, they would always say nothing is arbitrary. Nothing in film is arbitrary because everything takes so much planning. So having that in my mind when I watch movies, you know, that's what I thought was happening. And they were like, actually, no, we just felt like throwing that in there.
Yeah, honestly.
But
it's wild. It's wild. Yeah.
It's a little spice.
It does. It certainly does. And then, yeah, we move from that. I mean, we jump forward. I don't know. Is it 20 years? And then we're still going to jump forward another 4 years after that at some point, I think. I don't know. But, yeah, I'll say this. I had no clue where we were going the entire time. Like, I could not predict from moment to moment. One of the things that baffled me. So, okay, you have this sequence where Javier Bardem in the movie, love Bardem, he is a cop, right? And so he is that him and his partner, who may be a very troublesome, wife-beating, abusive, aggressive kind of partner, they get called to this domestic incident. A gunshot has gone off, and there was this, I mean, the filmmaking is fantastic. When they enter the apartment building, after they're seeing this couple struggle in the window from the street, I was thinking, why are you going so slowly? They're like guns out and they're like tiptoe, like creeping up this while having their own conversation. I was like, guys, please come on. But once they enter the apartment, that's when I realized we were in full soap opera territory. But there's a sequence that I have to, that I love. But before they get there, the gunshot goes off. So this couple are grappling. And when the gun falls and the shot goes off and the woman on the television gets shot and it cuts to that sequence, that whole sequence of events was just masterful. I fucking loved that, the way Almodovar put that together. And then,
me too.
Yeah, and then it's like, you know, when Bardem comes in and talks, you know, the gunman down, and she, you know, he gets the woman to safety, and she starts circling him in slow motion while completely besotted by him. That whole movement of that whole moment with the music and everything was like, oh, it's so dramatic, it's so operatic, but it's it really hits on all cylinders. It's really, really well done. And then, of course, you go from that to now. So Javier Bardem gets shot very heroically. Now he's a wheelchair basketball star?
That was a curveball.
What? I mean, yeah, you did not see that coming. Hats off to whether it was that was in the original source material, or whoever went there with the story, hats off to you, because honestly, that is creative.
Yeah, I was not expecting that, but yeah. Javier Bardem was great in the film. Mm-hmm. Like, you really like understand his struggle. And another kind of issue I had with the film, I'm kind of jumping forward a bit here, but with like the relationship between Bardem and Elena, I think that was his wife's name in the film. Mm-hmm. When you consider how things turn out, and you kind of have this almost happy ending for Victor, where he's like with Elena and they're like running the orphanage together, and then Bardem's character is like off on his own somewhere, I struggled to buy it, or like I don't really understand it, because we don't see really any struggle in, or like any conflict in their relationship up until the point where she goes in and has her night of passion with Victor in the orphanage. Again, that just feels like another massive curveball. Like,
oh, Jesus. Yeah.
And kind of what I meant when I was saying I don't understand the decisions the characters are making.
Mm-hmm.
Or they just, there's no like substance to the reasoning that's like presented to us, I mm-hmm. guess. That just makes it a little confusing.
Yeah.
I totally agree. Yeah, I thought that I literally was like, why is she doing this? Like, mm-hmm. She seems so in love with Javier Bardem's character. And then randomly, like, it seems to me like she's always afraid of this guy, until randomly she just decides that she's going to do this. But then I was literally like, I don't know what is happening. I don't understand how she's feeling. But I think I was thinking about that, and I was like, maybe we're not supposed to understand as much as we're just supposed to like fill in the blanks and almost just recognize like the patterns of the story also, because I think that for her, Javier Bardem, he was literally her hero. And being with him changed her life. She became somebody who just cares for other people. And she, you know, she's a brunette now, and she's like, you know, on her angel shit. And I think, you know, it was after she found out that he had an affair with his partner's wife that she went and did that. And so for me, it was almost like, maybe she's not that she, I don't know, something that I thought was not that she was trying to get back at him, but almost that she was like fulfilling this role of like karma in his life, by making this decision somehow. And maybe not doing it like to him again, but like something about that information made her go and do it herself. So, and there was a lot of that in the film of like pattern repetition. I mean, the fact that like, what's the main character's name?
Victor.
Victor's mother was a prostitute, and then he becomes totally infatuated and obsessed with this prostitute. And you know, and the way that the movie ends is parallel to the way that the movie begins. And so it's all just very like, to me, it's just giving like toxic cycles and people's karma and like all of those themes of just like a circular motion. So I don't know. It confused me as well, but I sort of just decided that it was fine.
That's a great point. Yeah, that's a really good angle to look at it like that. And I'm actually, you know, now that you put it that way, I'm sure you're right. And yeah, we could probably attack it from like a character perspective and say that makes no sense, but it's making its own narrative sense. It's just serving the circular needs of the story, yeah. I guess.
I should try not to think about it so much and just let the water flow where it needs to go.
Maybe in Almodovar movies, that's what we need to do.
Yeah.
Because like Victor's revenge plan is that he's going to make himself the most fantastic lover that, you know, that we have ever seen. And he will seduce her, I guess, because Bardem's character is in a wheelchair. So he can make love to her physically in a way that Bardem can't. So he's playing off of Bardem's disability now. And it's a very weak motive. The fact that it works is probably the most shocking aspect of the film.
But does it work?
Well, he sleeps with her.
Oh yeah, he sleeps with her, but I was almost under the impression that she had changed her feelings towards him before that even happened.
Oh, I see. Maybe.
But I don't know.
I'll say this. Almodovar knows how to shoot a sex scene. Those like thrusting buttocks, you know, just bouncing up and down. And then I think the poster of the movie is them lying with their bodies like meshed together. And it's so, I mean, the beauty of how their bodies look and the way that they're lit. I was like, oh my God, that's, that's genius. I'll say this as well. This is things that only happen in movies. And actually, this is starting to annoy me. But this is a big pet peeve. Look out for it. Saying random inappropriate things during sex that stops everything cold. So earlier on when what's her name? Is it Elena?
Yeah.
Yeah. She's having this really intimate moment with Javier Bardem in the bath, right? And he's pleasuring her the only way that he can. And halfway through, she just blurts out Victor's name and says, I happen to see this guy. And then everything just stops. Why? Surely anybody would wait until this moment was over. And notice this happens in films and TV shows all the time. All the time. It gets to me.
No, that was jarring. I was like, okay, totally different direction. Yeah. Yeah, no, that confused me as well.
It's like,
but again, it's like she was thinking about him in that moment. So maybe Luke, you're right about the fact that she, you know, despite being afraid of this man in some ways, maybe there was something about him that was intriguing to her and that she couldn't get off her. Clearly she couldn't stop thinking about it, even when she shouldn't be.
Well, and I'll say this as well. Here's another thing to look out for. It doesn't happen in this movie, but this is something you'll notice a lot. So let's say I'm in a scene with Caroline, but Caroline, you're with about five other friends. You're all in a circle. But this scene is about me coming to speak to you about something. I approach you and I'm like, hey, all four other friends, five other friends, just quietly walk away. And right. They perfectly leave us to have our moment. Honestly, look out for it. It's hilarious. Things that only happen in movies.
That's so funny.
Shall we go through some pairings?
Sure.
Sure.
Luke?
Okay. I kind of looked at this from like the more erotic side of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I would pair this film with Eyes Wide Shut.
Oh, okay.
Kubrick film.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think Live Flesh is a lot of like personal drama with like these erotic undertones and like themes of like infidelity, that kind of thing. Eyes Wide Shut is like a similar kind of energy to that, but is kind of masked as a bit more of like a thriller film. But I think they do have like a lot of similar elements, both with banging soundtracks as well.
Really?
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's my pick.
Cool. I don't think I've ever seen it in full. I've only seen like parts of it. Would you say it's a better movie or?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I would, yeah. Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent.
Have you seen it, Caroline?
I have not. I've seen pieces of it, but not the whole thing. So.
Definitely one to watch, I think.
For sure. Yeah.
I feel like it's, from what I've like read online, you either love it or you hate it. It's one of those films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I need to cover my Kubrick dark spots. Actually, a colleague of mine who recently listens to the podcast, and he listened to our discussion of Akari XB1, and he heard me say on that chat that I've never seen 2001 A Space Odyssey, and he brought in the Blu-ray for me the other day to the office.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah. So that was nice. Caroline, what did you pair this with?
So, okay, when you said pair it with something, I thought that I was like picking the next thing inspired by this movie. So I ended up picking a movie I haven't seen myself.
That's okay.
So I don't know if I did the assignment wrong.
Anything goes. As long as you've picked a movie, we'll take it.
Okay, so the movie that I picked is Fallen Angels from 1995.
Ooh, I've seen that one.
Do you have?
Wong Kar Wai, yeah.
You've seen it?
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, did you like it?
No.
Really? You didn't?
Out of the Wong Kar Wai films that I've seen, I think it's probably the weakest one. But that's just my preference.
Oh, really?
A lot of people do love it, yeah.
So I picked it because I started watching this movie because I I saw some stills from the film and I thought they were so beautiful. And I was like, I need to watch this movie. And I sort of I Googled it and found out what the premise is. And it's got a lot of similar themes to this film. It's got like, you know, infatuation and violence and also just the vibrant colors and the like just the visual aspect reminded me of this movie. I watched the first 5 minutes of Fallen Angels and then I fell asleep. So it's a movie that I've been wanting to finish, and just the first few minutes were sort of like making this movie was sort of reminding me of that. And I was like, I wonder if that would be an interesting pairing. So that's the one that I picked.
Love that. I love that. Nice. Because I've never seen a Wong Kar-wai movie, and I've heard so much about it. And I know, Luke, you've seen maybe his what's considered his best, and I've wanted to for so long, because what you're saying, Caroline, about how fucking beautiful it looks, that's exactly why I want to watch his movies. So yeah. I'm sure this has been on my list actually for a while. So that's great.
The biggest credit I can give Wong Kar-wai is that his films kind of like encapsulate the vibe or like the zeitgeist of like 90s Hong Kong so well.
Mm.
It's really impressive. And you watch a film and you really feel like you understand what it's like to live in this place and be in this place. It's just so vibrant and so like visceral. So I think that's what he does best.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Oh, I'm excited. Yeah, I can't wait to start my Wong Kar-wai deep dive, honestly. Well, this was hard for me. What the fuck do you pair this with? I was like, what? I'm not getting anything here. It goes through so many different permutations. But I ended up picking a movie called Never Talk to Strangers from 1995. Also, it's an erotic thriller starring Rebecca De Mornay and Antonio Banderas, directed by Peter Hall, I believe his name is. Yeah, I've only ever seen this film once, and this is interesting. So this was part of movie nights I used to have with my mum and my stepfather. Ooh, at the time.
Erotic thriller with your mum, that's brave.
Yeah. So what we spoke about before, Caroline, you were saying, you know, when you were younger, you would watch, your parents would let you just watch inappropriate movies, whatever, you could watch whatever. So there would be no vetting. So we would watch the movie, and any movie that we watch together as a family, whenever there's any hint of a sex scene about to start, what my mum would do is she would nudge my stepfather and go, and he would have to pick up the remote and hit the skip forward, like skip scene button. So, you know, these two characters will be just starting to, you know, make out and get hot and heavy. And then all of a sudden there's like an immediate skip and it's like, oh okay. I only realized, and that happened in this movie, by the way, I only realized afterwards that that button does not skip scene. It skips like four or five scenes. So no wonder we'd cut to a point where there's a dead cat all of a sudden. And we're just like, what the fuck's going on? But yeah, I've only ever seen it that once. Is it a good movie? I don't know. I don't remember. Probably not. But from what I can recall, Rebecca De Mornay is like a criminal psychologist. You know, she has lots of clients, criminals, some in jail. I think, who's the main actor of Paris, Texas? What's his name? It's escaping me. Harry Dean Stanton. So he's one of the clients. Anyway, she meets a guy in a supermarket, beautiful 1995 Antonio Banderas, and they begin this hot and steamy affair with each other. And then as soon as that happens, she starts... It's like she's being stalked. She's being harassed. And so the movie, I think, kind of throws up the question, is it Antonio Banderas? Is it one of her clients who's noticed that she's been seeing someone? Who is it? So it puts Banderas in this position of, is he the villain? That is as far as the connection goes. It's erotic. It's a thriller. It has elements of stalking and maybe sleeping with the wrong person. And it's got Antonio Banderas in it, who is an Almodovar regular, you know, has been in many Almodovar movies early in his career. So that's what I went for. I kind of want to watch it again.
That's just an interesting one. I've never even heard of it.
Okay. Yeah. That's probably for a good reason. Yeah. It's probably, maybe I shouldn't be.
You're not selling this to us very well.
Yeah. Oh, but that's great. I mean, wow. What an eclectic bunch of films. I love when we do pairings. Honestly, that's always my favorite part.
Yeah. Nice.
Cool. Well, I guess that about wraps it up. Caroline, thank you so much for coming back and joining us. It's been such a pleasure having you, and I hope we can have you back again.
Yes, thank you so much. This was a blast, and I'll come back anytime.
Amazing. All right. Well, Luke, thank you, sir, as always. I want to say special thanks to Phoenix Cinema. Our music is by Stefan Krieger, and our episodes are edited by Noah Anderson. If anyone is interested in following our film club, which Caroline will be joining us on again soon, right?
Yes, immediately.
You can have a look at our Instagram page, The Film Geeks, to see what we're watching, rating, and awarding. And if you like this podcast, please share, like, rate, and subscribe on your way to watching a movie at the Phoenix Cinema. I'll see you there.